The following program is produced and furnished in conjunction with Kevin Stanfield and Claude Jennings, who are entirely responsible for its content. Sorry, guys, you are on your own. This is the Federal Football Report, a weekly wrap-up of all things burgundy and gold. The Federal Football Report on Federal News Radio. Here are your hosts, Kevin Stanfield and Claude Jennings.
Gentlemen, it is the second show of the season of the Federal Football Report on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com. I'm Claude Jennings. Oh, a special assignment, by the way. I'm over close to the West Coast, not quite West Coast. I'm in Scottsdale, Arizona.
Kevin Stanfield, he's back in
Washington, D.C.
Wait a minute. I got to interrupt you, man. You know that I only work from the right side of the mic, right? I can't. Yeah, I can't work unless, you know, you're on the right side. I got to get on the right side of the mic, so we got to switch sides. So let me get on the right side of the mic like I'm supposed to be. Right, because, you know, I only do the show from the right side of the mic. That's what, you know, that's what you pay me for. All right, so, all right, we're good.
So if you couldn't catch what Kevin's talking about, it's the second week of the year the Skins fall to the Dallas Cowboys, 27-23 to fall 0-2 on the year, but not only 0-2 on the year, but 0-2 at home, two home losses again after a 27-23 loss to the Dallas Cowboys. Before we start getting into the game, Kevin, your thoughts, man?
Well, you know, first of all, there was almost a domestic incident in my house because my wife just loves some burgundy and gold. You know, fan since birth. Father fan, mother fan, grandparents fan. So I made the mistake of saying, you know, this boy Dak Prescott's a pretty good ball player. That, you know, she almost stopped speaking to me after that. But you gotta admit, it's rare that you see a guy come into the league with this level of experience. I mean, it's Russell Wilson-esque. It's rookie RG3-esque, right? And the only reason he's in there is because everybody in front of him got hurt. How do the people who make football decisions not see that this kid can play?
Well, not only that, I mean, look, when you talk about everyone in front of him, most folks, of course, think of Tony Romo, but not just Tony Romo. Remember, about 2 weeks before Tony Romo even got hurt, Kellen Moore was hurt. I think he broke his ankle or something like that. And so if it wasn't for Kellen Moore getting hurt before Romo got hurt, Dak wouldn't even be in the game. And you're right, you know, so many times, you know, you watch these analysts on all the big networks and they're talking about this quality that they call poise. He's poised in the pocket. He's poised when things break down. Poise. You know, and they use this stuff so easily that sometimes you don't understand what it looks like. There were several plays in this game where you could look at Dak and you could not tell, wow, this is a rookie, because he wasn't shaken by the situation. There was one where they faked the handoff to Ezekiel Elliott left. He rolled out and there were two guys in his face. And as opposed to panic, he just panicked. He stopped. He threw the ball up top to the tight end for a big gain. And there was one other one that actually resulted in him going down for a sack late in the game, but it was better than trying to make a play. And these were one of those plays where Romo may have been able to get elusive, but then he would try to make something happen. Sometimes things great happen with Romo. Sometimes things bad happen with Romo. But with Dak, what he did was he took the sack and had his team at least live on for another play and make anything crucial happen. And so, I mean, you look at this kid and you're like, you know, what did Dallas see in the fourth round to get him that several other ones who needed quarterbacks, what did they miss? And I think in this draft there was something like 8 quarterbacks that went ahead of Dak.
That's right. That's absolutely right.
And I'm not trying to put him in the Hall of Fame right now. I'm just saying that as a rookie who was third on the depth chart until two injuries gave him that role, he doesn't seem at this position right now, even as a rookie. Just the second game is too big for him. Because tell you what, if the Redskins had won this game, just like last week, it would not have been Dak's fault.
Yeah, you know, he's in a position now that he wins in spite of the coaching, in spite of the defense, in spite of the...
in spite of a running back who seems to be like... A running back took with the fourth pick who seems to not want to be in the NFL right now.
Yeah. And, you know, he's winning in spite of all this. But before we... like you said, before we give him the Hall of Fame, this is a show for the burgundy and gold. I know that, you know, you had to go to Scottsdale, Arizona because you couldn't take, like, the intensity of this game, right?
But...
Truth be known, you out there is promoting the Federal Football Report, you know, out west, right? You know, because they like this truthful, hard hitting analysis. They don't have that out there, and, you know, we don't have it here either. But
yeah,
you know, analyzing, you know, a general opinion of the burgundy and gold. They are who we thought they are. They are who they thought they are. I know that you're not a big Twitterer, but, you know, you follow us at FF Rep. I made an observation today. And, you know, in defense of Kirk Cousins, it's hard to be accurate when you got $18 million in your wallet. It's got to throw you off balance, right?
It holds you down,
slows you up. Yeah.
Number one, we knew that Kirk would be over evaluated this year, I think, for like three reasons. Number one is because this is the first year coming into this season that he was the guy. There was nobody else looking over his shoulder. There wasn't the RG3 stuff. There wasn't even, if you remember, 2 years ago, the Colt McCoy stuff. Like, they would say any one of these guys could be the quarterback. So he didn't have any controversy as to who was the starter. He was the guy. Number two, he had success to finish the year last year. Don't forget, the first part of last season, Kurt was not, you know, what we saw the last half of the season, but he finished very successfully, led them into the playoffs. And so we're wondering, would you see that same Kirk? Now, the third point would be the fact that he got this $20 million franchise tag. And so, like you said, it's something about $18 million that kind of holds you down, make it hard to move a little bit.
Yeah, Wallace's all bulky. Yeah, it's hard, man.
Right. And so we're looking at this and like, okay, now we know that Kirk will be over-evaluated. But what I'm looking at right now is I'm not sure, like you said, he kind of is who we thought he was. I'm not sure. They tell him, well, Kirk's not playing as well as he played. But you're looking at just five games from the end of last season that, by the way, they finished 9-7 in a week east. And so it's not as if he was, you know, Tom Brady with Randy Moss setting records, although he did set a lot of team records. But, again, you have to take it all kind of in stride, the fact that you're looking at a five-game sample, thinking that that's who he is, as opposed to all the other the long range kind of sample size that you have of Kirk Cousins. And so, I mean, you know, he missed a lot of receivers early, and that could have changed the whole complexion of the game. I mean, he missed Jamison Crowder early deep. He missed DeSean Jackson early deep. He threw a low ball. I think that was to Pierre Garçon in the end zone deep, where Pierre had his man beat, and if he would have just put, you know, didn't throw it in the ground, he probably would have caught him for a touchdown. So you saw some things that, you know, could have really had the skins up big early in the game that Kirk Cousins just flat out missed on.
Well, you know what? As a fan of the Burgundy and Gold, and I say this to all the fans out there, we better hope that they find a way of making Cousins the man, that they work out of all this. I'm attributing all this to some of the bubble wrap that he was wrapped in the preseason. It sticks to your fingers, it sticks to the ball, right? It's hard to shake that loose. Kirk didn't play a lot in the preseason, which is what the preseason is for.
Right.
I don't know.
Especially for guys that you may consider, you know, unknown commodities.
Yeah.
But again, what did we prematurely think that we knew what we had in Kirk? And I don't mean to just start this. I mean, it's only the second week, and, you know, no one loves quarterback controversies like, you know, the Washington market. But I'm not sure, you know, did we think we have a known commodity way too early? Should he have played more in the preseason to get those reps with the starting team? Or do you rest? I mean, again, we're talking about a team in Dallas who lost their number one and number two quarterback, number two in practice, number one in the preseason game. And so do you want to risk that with Kirk? I don't know. But like you said, I mean, you still have a guy who you really don't know everything about right now. And by the way, a guy who's still growing.
Yeah, but you look at the contrast and look at the quarterback that had the star in his helmet today. Because he was a rookie and because of the way the teams play nowadays, he got a lot of time in the preseason. He got extensive playing time in the preseason. And the first game, like, he was amazing, right? The legends were being written about him now. You know, in Texas, they write songs about you, right? You know, and
They already had his Hall of Fame speech, right?
Yeah. But you know, and then after like the second preseason game, he had more touchdown passes than he had incompletions. And that's
right,
not a fluke.
Right.
But still, you know, he has, you know, situational awareness, right? He's had enough experience where whatever jitters he's had, you know, it's not new to him now, right? And you know, playing, like, you know, it's pressure playing for the Burgundy, I mean, for the Cowboys, man. I mean, that's America's team, right? You know, everything the Cowboys, you know, do is known worldwide. So, you know, in contrast and comparisons of the two quarterbacks, maybe this is something that Kirk can't work his way out of. But I know there was another quarterback in town that when he would make a similar mistake, the coach would publicly vilify this guy, right? And so much so that he was run out of town, and he went from being the starter to being inactive every week, right? You know, mm-hmm. And I know he's got his situations now, right? So much so. Let me go off track for a minute. I don't know if you saw the pregame show, but there was a skit in the pregame show with, and I forget the actress's name, but she was in the show, Are We There Yet, the TV show. She played the chick Mimi or whatever the name is. And mm-hmm. now she's the wife on the new series, Lethal Weapon. She plays Damon Wayans' wife, I believe. Mm-hmm. But, she did a skit with Greg Jennings, you know, formerly of the Packers and the Dolphins. And the skit involved them reading tweets, and some of the tweets were like cyberbullying almost, because they did a tweet of Strahan that said, "Did Michael Strahan never hear of braces?" and stuff like that. And then they did something about a Terry Bradshaw, and then they mentioned RG3, and they said, is anybody surprised RG is hurt? That boy delicate, something like that. I mean, you know, come on, yo, everybody just piling on, right? I said, you know, I thought it was cyberbullying, whatever Fox did, and they definitely shouldn't do that anymore. Back to the thing, you know, and I know it's hot out there in Arizona, man, so we're going to, like, mm-hmm. like not keep you out there just for this scouting report for the Federal Football Report on Federal News Radio. But, yeah, it's I don't want to bail on Kirk yet. I do know we got Colt McCoy in the wings, and he has every opportunity to turn this thing around, man. But, you know, I just...
Let me say this before we move on too far. You had mentioned about Dallas and all the pressure being the quarterback and how bad Dallas is. And, yeah, I am in Scottsdale, Arizona, on special assignment covering the Cardinals for the Football Report. Check this out. My wife and I were in a sports bar catching the game, and you see this sign right above where the bartender is, and just totally, like, not related to anything. It just says, Dallas sucks. And it's like, wait a minute. Like, why in the world? I mean, here we are in Scottsdale, Arizona. I understand that Cardinals used to be in the NFC East a long, long time ago.
Right.
Again, they're either loved or hated. And we're just sitting there, and my wife says, hey, look up at that sign. Because, of course, she's a Redskins fan. And I'm looking up, and it says, Dallas sucks. So I'm just like, wow. The hate and love is everywhere.
Not quite as much as they used to, unfortunately, right? Because this quarter, mm-hmm. just look at a little revisionist history. If they had this guy last year, they would have easily won the East.
And, well, see, that's the thing. If you look at that, so, and this is a Federal Football Report on Federal News Radio. We're talking burgundy and gold, but, you know, again, Dallas came into Washington, took the win. So we're comparing that and contrasting the same with the quarterback situation. If you look at, like, last year, you had three quarterbacks who were veterans, who were, you know, just the journeyman veterans, all came in, and out of, 14 games? Well, I guess Romo got hurt in the halfway through the Carolina game, so I guess 13 games if you want to count full games. Only won one, and that was because DeSean Jackson made a bad mistake on a punt return.
Right.
And then you get this rookie who in his second game without Romo wins one and could have won one last week if Terrence Williams or Lance Dunbar gets out of bounds, or Lyle Collins doesn't have a holding call on two consecutive drives. And mm-hmm. so, yeah, you compare that with what they did, and that just shows you the difference between when you have a guy who you know can play in this league. And I was talking to a Cowboys fan at the sports bar. It was full of them, by the way, during the game. And he says, I don't care if Dallas goes 4-12 or 5-11 this year. The truth of the matter is we found our quarterback for the next 10 years, and I'm good with that.
That's scary.
And it shows you the value of knowing that you have that guy.
And you just stumble across it, right? Because if you look at Jerry Jones' history as a general manager, and I apologize to all the Burgundy and Gold fans. I know we spent an awful lot of time talking about the Cowboys, but we're very positive people here. We hate, you know,
we're going
to give you the truth here pretty soon, right? So, you know, we're just delaying the inevitable, but Jerry Jones has stumbled across an all-pro offensive line. Now he's stumbled across a quarterback. Mm-hmm. He stumbled across Cole Beasley, right? Who for some reason thinks he's Wes Walker. And you know, you got to give this man credit. If he stumbles across some defense, which he stumbled across Sean Lee, and it's not his, yeah, and those guys who he stumbled across who are stumbling because they high, you know, who are on suspension. You know, we got some serious competition in the NFC East, right? So you got to give him props, right? We're realists. We're not going to just tell you how bad the Burgundy and Gold are, how bad they play. We're going to tell you how, and this hurts me to say this. Somebody hand me some Tylenol because this is painful. How good, how potentially good the Cowboys can be.
Right, yeah, and again, I mean, that potential comes. Now, one thing that comes with this new quarterback coming in, one thing that kind of shocked me a little bit is the fact that they waited so long to go to Alfred Morris. I mean, Ezekiel Elliott played better this week than he did last week, but that doesn't mean a whole lot because he played really bad against the Giants. And they were really patient with this guy and trying to get the ball, but they act as if they don't know how good Alfred Morris is.
Excuse me, you're moving over. You're on my side now. You're not. I play the right side of the mic. You got to move over, man. Get back over there. I exclusively play the right side of the mic. Okay. All right. Okay. Now go ahead, Alfred Morris. And, you know, you had to throw that in, and that was painful. But you knew it was going to happen, right? Didn't you know that? Did you know he was going to score a touchdown?
I figured they put Alf in one because Zeke played better, but he was still slow to start. And then once he got going, you know, I figured, okay, it looks like the young kid's got his legs under him. But he put the ball on the ground twice, and they lost both fumbles. It's not like he fumbled and they got it back. He put the ball on the ground, and they lost both. And it could have been a horrible situation for Dallas if not the defense holding the Redskins to not scoring touchdowns off those turnovers. And then here comes Alf, and what does he do? He scores a touchdown. And like you said, you knew it was going to happen. Some sort of, you know, poetic justice. But I will say this, conversely, the Redskins actually weren't bad running the ball again today. I felt like they could have ran the ball more. Dallas didn't do a great job stopping Matt Jones all day.
Yeah, that long 14-yard touchdown run, he looked inspired there. He looked like that was something that you know, he heard all the criticism the past week. It was like he had a point to prove. But for a guy to be that big, it seems like there's got to be some north and south running. That influence blocking scheme where he slides and then makes, you know, cuts back and makes the burst. That's cool for a while, but sometimes you just got to show me that you get a yard. Alf would let you know he's coming, right? You know, Alf's
right.
Alf will get hit in the backfield and make two or three yards. That was the thing about Alf. John Lynch made a very profound point on the TV broadcast when the announcer said Alfred Morris is in and, you know, they got Matt Jones and they felt like, you know, Matt Jones was going to be the runner of the future. So they had to let, Alf go. And John Lynch said, why couldn't you keep two of them?
<You know? laughs> And I said, very simple, right?
Yeah, sometimes you don't have to be Einstein, right? Why can't you keep two?
Well, what did we say last year? A very wise man once said that sometimes it's the first duty of the wisest of men to restate the obvious. It's okay to have two good running backs. Number one, Matt Jones does run a little too high for my taste. I think he needs to kind of get a little lower. You have Alfred Morris and then you have Matt Jones. Why do you feel like you need to get rid of one or the other? I mean, what are you afraid to pay Alfred Morris? But unlike Kirk Cousins, where you feel like you have a small sample size, you have 4 years of production worth of 4 years worth of tape, 4 years worth of production from Alfred Morris. Why do you feel like you need him to prove more? I mean, he clearly has way more in the tank. Give him the big contract. I mean, this guy was running, giving you his all on his rookie contract, where he was just making a couple hundred thousand dollars a year, which is nothing to laugh at, but at the same time, the production he's putting out is worth way more than that. And so you give him, the money, pay him that money, let Matt Jones out his rookie contract, and you've got two big backs, one who's definitely a bruiser, one who can learn to be a bruiser. But instead, he leaves, and what does he do? He goes to the Dallas Cowboys. He scores a touchdown for those guys. And if Dallas is smart, and they haven't proven to me yet in the last, since Jason Garrett's become head coach, that they're anywhere near smart, they would actually start out next week. But I'm pretty sure they're not because Jason Garrett makes bad decisions all the time.
Speaking of decisions, what was your I know you're a totally unbiased, impartial analyst.
I am totally unbiased.
Yeah. Did you think of the onside kick? What did you think of the onside kick call?
Well, I just said it a few seconds ago. Jason Garrett does not make good decisions. He always makes bad choices, and that was just another choice that he is trying to lose the game. I feel like Jason Garrett looked at the schedule and saw 8 games that he can win, and then he said, okay, so I'm going to try to lose the other 8. So he did that last week, and then he tried to lose this game because he said, I have a very impressive 8-8, pretty mediocre record most seasons, and I'm pretty much a .500 coach, and so I want to try to keep that going. And so he tried to find ways to lose this game. game, and it just backfired on them. They found a way to win anyway.
Some would call it gutsy. I don't know if I'm some of that some or not, because you got like last week we were talking about when you're looking at going for two, you not only have to or going for it on fourth down. You not only have to look at what happens if we make it. You have to look at the consequences if we don't make it. And the biggest thing to me is it was hot in D.C. today. It was like I think it was the air temperature was like 85, so it must be close to 100 on the field. And your defense just got off the field, right? And then you scored. But don't put your defense back out there. That's one of the consequences if you don't get the onside kick. Now, they held the Brooklyn goal to a field goal. That's because of some weird decisions by Jay Gruden, right? It's like the whole Josh Dotson thing. Okay, yeah, we realize that you got him because he was good on the fade at TCU. But that doesn't mean you got to throw him the fade every time you get into the window, right? You know, the Cowboys were prepared for that. But, you know, there's a lot of decisions, man. You have to wonder, like, what are these guys thinking?
When I look at that decision for the onside kick, I'm just thinking, like, what defense is Jason Garrett watching? Is he watching his own defense? Like, these guys cannot cover, and they cannot stop the run. The only reason why a lot of those drives ended in punts was because the Washington Redskins self-destructed. And so I'm thinking, you know, why in the world in this post game would I even try to do an onside kick? And the offense for the Cowboys did a good job of keeping the ball as far as time of possession and number of plays, because they have to keep the best way that they can play defense is keeping the defense off the field. And for most of the first half, Kirk Cousins was the best defensive back that the Cowboys seemed to have, especially riding down the field when he threw that interception in the end zone. I mean, I think the big takeaway from this game, I mean, you can talk about Dak, you can talk about Alfred Morris, you can talk, I mean, the Cowboys defense finally stood up when they needed a couple stops, even though they still got the ball back and it came down to a Hail Mary play. The big takeaway from this game is that, wow, you know, we thought we knew what we had with Kirk. You know, he possibly will be a good quarterback when everything works out well as far as protection and guys are getting open. But, you know, maybe we don't know everything. Maybe he still needs to grow. Maybe we shouldn't have evaluated so fast based on that five-game stretch of last year. And you said it best last week that hey, maybe it was the right move to just franchise tag him and not put him on a multi-year long-term deal.
Yeah, but if that was the right move, that means in the back of their heads they're saying, man, we got to find us a quarterback. That's right. You know, but you know, this whole society, this system, is something wrong when you know that this is not your guy, but you still give him $18 million. You know, there's something wrong with this picture.
There's something wrong with this. We're not sure if you're our quarterback, so we're going to just pay you $18 million as opposed to 55.
And give it to him apologetically, right? You know, sorry to have to do this to you, Kurt, but here, take this with you, man.
So sorry to do this. Yeah. It is $18 million.
Yeah. Well, I know you're getting kind of warm out there in the desert, man. You might as well throw it to break now so we can continue with this fiasco.
Well, I think we're going to talk about the Redskins, right? At some point.
I think we're going to break it down, go down offense, all aspects of the offense and the defense and the teams, you know, because they all lost today. All of them.
Yeah, everybody lost. They all lost. All points of this game. Yeah, it's the Federal Football Report. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, welcome back to the Federal Football Report on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. FederalNewsRadio.com is the website. I'm Claude Jennings. The Redskins fall to 0-2, 27-23 at home, a loss to the much hated Dallas Cowboys rookie quarterback Dak Prescott. First win with that star on his helmet. Now, I'm in Scottsdale, Arizona. Looking at the schedule, you see that the Redskins come to Arizona in December 4th. I'm just doing some advanced scouting out here.
Yeah, it's going to take them that much time to prep. Yeah. It's going to take
them. I mean, you know, well, here's the thing. We take our job seriously.
Yeah, right.
When you take your job seriously, you do whatever it takes to kind of get the inside scoop and get a feel. So I want to make sure that we had everything we needed for December 4th.
Yeah, and you know, we should pass this information along to the Berkeley and Gold, because preparation doesn't seem to be like paramount out there with them, right? You know, it's like we lock into our way, and that's the way that we're going to do it. And unfortunately, these guys aren't crafty enough. It's too easy if a rookie quarterback can come in and prepare situationally for what you're going to do. Your defense isn't complicated enough. Now, you know, it's hard in this business. Like, a lot of times we work with guys like, you know, the coaches of pro and college teams, and we see them, we smile at them, we actually do shows with a lot of them. And it's kind of hard for you to say it at any given time that somebody should be fired.
Right. You
know, right. Because the same guy might be sitting across the table from you in a week. But,
after he gets fired.
But you saw what happened in Buffalo, right? They put up 35 points, and they fired the offensive coordinator. So I'm just saying, you know, Joe Barry, I've never met you. I'm just saying, right?
Well, here's the thing. I mean, you talked about it. Look, there were two big stories from the NFC East. Well, there were several big stories, but two of the big stories coming from the Redskins lost to Pittsburgh, and Dallas's loss to the Giants were two things. Number one, the fact that the Redskins would not adjust to Josh Norman staying on one side of the field. They said, hey, why in the world would they not move him to shadow Antonio Brown, especially when you saw that Rashad Breeden was having problems to lightly covering him. And then the story out of Dallas was, how in the world did Dak Prescott not target, at least try to throw it to Dez Bryant more? And so those two storylines parallel one another. So you know, in week two, when the two teams play against each other, those two storylines are going to collide. I mean, that's going to be one of the main things to watch. And so what was interesting was the fact that that in the first half, you could see that most of Dez Bryant's, all of his catches, I believe, in the first half, came when they were either in zone or against Rashad Breeland, not against Josh Norman. And so again, restating the obvious is, why isn't Josh Norman covering him the whole time? Clearly the rookie quarterback can tell when Josh Norman's not on him, and he force-feeds him the ball because he's trying to get him the ball more now. Why not push Josh Norman on him the whole time to equalize that? Again, that goes back to Joe Barry. And look, I understand, we prep for things to be one way. If we do it another way, it's going to throw the whole scheme off. But again, these are professional athletes who are getting paid millions of dollars to do this. You mean to tell me that if you throw one wrinkle into your system, that all of a sudden nobody's going to know what to do and they'll all be confused? Well, then why are you paying them millions of dollars to only do one thing? No one can walk and chew gum at the same time. They can't rub their stomach and pat their head at the same time. They can't switch from a zone or man coverage to a zone or man coverage or to a zone coverage with Josh Norman playing both. You can't draw up a scheme to do both. I understand you want to believe in Rashad Breeden, but you can believe all you want to. But if he keeps getting beat, it's like, believe all you want to, but he's getting beat by these guys. Now, granted, he may not see this receivers like this all year round, like Antonio Brown and then Dez Bryant. But at the same time, these are two games at least one against Dallas that you could have won had you just made that adjustment. And why have Josh follow Dez for part of the game or for certain plays? Why not just have him follow him all game?
You know, I don't know if you're a big fan of the Big Bang Theory like I am, and if you are, and if our listeners are, they know this reference, you know, Sheldon and Sheldon's famous line, "That's my spot." So that's maybe that was the thing. And you know what? We're supposed to be talking about the offense this segment, but I don't care. We're on the roll here. You know, I found it a little bit unnerving, the coverage that Fox was giving Josh Norman, right? I mean, sure, he made some great plays. The ball where he punched the ball out of Zeke's hands. That was a great play. He made some good cornerback plays, but no matter, like, it was like, if the play was on the other side of the field, they made it a point to show you what Josh Norman was doing. And you give it to the rookie quarterback. Hey, this guy on this side of the field is an all-pro cornerback. Let me look to the other side of the field for my option. That's pretty heady stuff for a rookie. Yeah, sometimes, like, you know, we overstate the obvious, right? And you know, when you try to outthink yourself, well, I'm going to lock down this side of the field. Well, fine. All you're doing is making the field smaller for the quarterback. And, you know, you couple that with a lack of pass rush and Chris Baker going down with injury early and they're having a, what's the guy's name? Huggy? some guy that you never heard of playing the defensive line. It's a bad situation. Now, I will say this. Trent Murphy, who they played these weird games with in the off season, they had him gain like 25 pounds because they were going to put his hand in the dirt and have him be like the defensive end in the 3-4. And then they decided, well, no, this is not working out. We're going to have you lose the weight now and play linebacker. He had a couple of sacks of Dak on the speed rush. Ryan Kerrigan mm-hmm. had a lot of pressures and things, but by the same token, it was that aggressive play that allowed Ezekiel Elliott to cut back a lot of times and gain 3, 4, 5 yards. And that's what you need from your running game. You don't expect 15 yards a pop from your running game. You need positive yardage. It's not about just gaining. It's about controlling the game, controlling the tempo, controlling the clock. Give yourself you have options when it's 2nd and 5. And 5 is not, it's not always a passing down, and that makes your play action, more convincing. So I gotta wonder exactly what it is that they're thinking. And also we mentioned last week, about the safety situation, on this team. God bless Sean Taylor's soul, but his thing was not so much intimidation, but you had to look and see where he was for that split second before the middle of the field. So D'Angelo might know the defense, but he's just not, he just doesn't have enough rocks in his pocket, as my people say.
Exactly, and I think that's a big deal because, when you look at it, Dallas struggled to run the ball last week against the Giants. And so, along with not targeting Dez, one of the bigger storylines was, will they be able to get the running game on track? Now, they did do better than they did last week, but they weren't pounding the ball against the Redskins by any stretch of the imagination this week. And so, it was interesting to see that the run game, while better than last week for the Cowboys, was not this dominant run game that you see from the offense that we thought we'd see from, it's funny because we talk about this Cowboys offensive line, they really were really good in 2014. Last year they weren't. And then this year they haven't really been playing dominant. And so they're kind of living off of a reputation from a season 2 years ago. But the Cowboys run game, again, while better than week one, wasn't all that great this week against the Skins. It was Dak Prescott, taking what the defense was giving him, going away from Josh Norman, that really told the story. And the Cowboys were really good on converting on third downs. The Redskins did not get off the field on those third downs. And that's a big deal. And like you said, you can have Josh Norman on one side, but if those safeties, if D'Angelo Hall's not bringing fear and some of those receivers coming across the middle like Cole Beasley, and if you still have one corner in Breland who can't stop their number one receiver as long as he's lined up on his side, you're still going to have problems with the passing game. And we thought that the second would be one of the stronger points of the defense. And the first 2 weeks, at least, we've seen that it's been a liability. And I refuse to believe that it's all on Breshad Breland. You put anybody on the best receiver, unless he's an elite cornerback, every single play, and the quarterback has time to get him the ball, that guy's going to get open all the time. I think the coaches have got to do a better job of putting your second-best corner on the team in a better position to make plays. Again, we're not talking about Josh Norman getting beat. We're talking about Breshad Breland getting beat. He's not your best cornerback. Can the coaching staff please help this guy? Again, if you don't want Josh to follow the best receiver, that's fine, and at least give help over the top, or at least help underneath. Do something to help your second best corner, not the first guy, second guy.
During the course of the week, after we started the conversation last week on here in the Federal Football Report about like Breland being locked down on one side, you started hearing the different radio broadcasts use the term traveling. So Josh Norman has to travel with the receivers, much like you traveled to Scottsdale, Arizona. So that's the term now.
One check on bag, one carry.
He's got to travel. But when one time Dez lined up in the slot and Breland and Norman went to the slot too. He said, "Oh, he's traveling with him. He's traveling. Big deal. Big deal. It's football. What's the big deal?" So they're in man coverage. So what? We know that. I know it. Dak knows it. It's not that big a deal.
And that's the thing, you bring up such a great point, Kevin. I'm so tired of people acting like football, whether it plays on offense, a defensive scheme, it's like rocket science. It's not rocket science. If it was, then these kids wouldn't leave school after 2 years, after 1 year. They'd stay in school and they'd get master's degrees because you need that to be a rocket scientist. At some point, it's like cover the guy in front of you. Oh, who's their best receiver? Number 88? Okay, well, we're going to put 24 on him because he's our best cover corner. And by the way, if he doesn't, then we'll ask somebody to help. We'll ask for help. How many times have you been on the playground playing basketball and you're covering a guy who's bigger than you or faster than you, and he crosses you up or he gets a rebound and you say, help. Help in the middle, or help outside. You ask for help. The coach should just get him help on these receivers who he can't cover if you insist on Josh Norman just playing one side of the ball. Again, this isn't rocket science. I'm tired of them, he's traveling with this. Well, we got this. Well, we do things this way. It's too complicated. It's not complicated. It's football. You can get a guy out there and he'll say, hey, well, maybe he should cover him. Break things down and make it more simple. If it's too complex for Breshad Breeland or anyone else to execute the passing game, then maybe you should make your scheme a little more simple and play to your personnel as opposed to trying to make your personnel fit into some scheme. And I'm sorry, but if you think Breshad Breeland doesn't understand that he's getting beat, you're crazy. And it does something to his confidence. He knows he's getting beat. He's looking at these guys catch the ball right in front of him or behind him. And so he knows he's getting beat. It's like I was talking to a guy who coaches Little League football, and sometimes you get these parents, you know what I mean, screams, put my kid in the game. Put my kid in the game. You know what? Your kid knows that he can't catch. He doesn't want to go in the game. He'd rather not mess things up so that everybody screams at him.
Everybody
so he knows. Breshad Breeland understands. I'm getting beat. Switch this. Switch it. I don't want to cover this. I mean, you know what I mean? No, the competitive juices, obviously, he's not going to say I don't want to cover him, but he understands he's getting beat. He knows it. That stuff deflates that confidence. Please just have Josh Norman cover the best receiver. I just don't even understand why we're even talking about this, and we haven't even talked about the offense, but hardly at all yet.
Yeah, but I'm just looking ahead to next week, man, where we're going to get Odell Beckham Jr. and Victor Cruz, right? And plus, the Giants always have some receiver come out of nowhere that you never heard of before that always, like, you know, put him in the slot or some tight end or catch two touchdowns.
Well, they got
passes.
That big tight end O'Donnell, right?
Yeah. Donald is a beast as well. So, yeah, they better come up with something, right? Because, yeah, it's making Josh Norman look wonderful, right? Yeah, we're pumping him up. We're inflating him like a hot air balloon, right? But
you don't hear him screaming about let me cover the best receiver anymore. He's just like, nah, we're going to do whatever we do. It's all good. Yeah. He's like, let Breshad get beat all week. I'm good.
In the words of Dr. Sheldon Cooper, that's my spot.
And this is our spot. It's the Federal Football Report on Federal News Radio. I'm Claude Jennings of Scottsdale, Arizona, doing some in-depth scouting for the Redskins game against the Cardinals on December 4th. Kevin's back in D.C. We're talking about the Redskins loss 27-23, 0-2 to start the season. 0-2 at home, by the way. And again, like Kevin said, they go up to New York to face the Giants. We'll talk about the Giants game coming up in the next segment. But before we take back to the break, Kevin, I do want to talk a little bit about the offense.
Talk a lot about him. Yeah.
The big story, obviously, I think, is Kirk Cousins missed. He missed a lot of passes. Now, here's the thing. Now, I don't know whether this is just a byproduct of all the convicts for Dallas who weren't able to play that defensive line, all the druggies, or whether the offensive line did a really good job of pass protection. But they did a pretty good job of pass protection. I mean, Kirk had a lot of time to deliver the ball. And Dallas, again, although missing two of their starting defensive ends, because that's just what they do. They're the criminals. they still could not get any pressure on Kirk Cousins, and the Redskins were able to run the ball a lot. It's just a matter of a lot of missed passes by Kirk.
Yeah, and that was the weird thing. It wasn't like he was pressured. It was just a matter of confidence, right? You know, when you step into that pass and you know it's going to be there, right? It's like, you know, you're not, most of the time when guys throw short, they're aiming the football. They're not throwing the pass. They're aiming it like you're trying to get the ball through the circle, through the tire, the swinging tire or something. Mm-hmm. And he had time. It's not like that he was being threatened or anything. It wasn't like he was like being knocked down or hurried or guys were hitting him in the head or anything. It's just a matter of the bubble wrap. And I think that part is going to be all right. And something else, the defensive, coordinators around this league have a whole year's worth of film on Jordan Reed now. And I think that they're determined that Jordan Reed is not going to beat them. He catches a pass against them now, you know, every once in a while, but they're determined. And that's Kurt's safety blanket right there. That's the, like, the thing that Linus carries and when he's stuck in his thumb. That's what Jordan Reed is. That's why when Jordan Reed went out last year, Kurt was kind of lost. And it's so weird because they got guys now. They got Niles Paul. They got Brendan Davis. They got guys who can fill that void when Jordan Reed is down. And plus, when those other guys are in the game, you got a little bit of an edge. because Jordan Reed will not block nobody. I don't know if he's unaware, you know, because if he has to take a second to block, that's a second he can't get out into his route, you know.
Right,
so
that
you,
right.
you're losing something with Reed in as a blocker. So just go ahead and put him in the slot, you know, make him a receiver. Stop fooling everybody, you know. It's you know, the interesting thing to me is that these aren't new statements we're making. These are the same things we said all last year. So it's not like we're just, you know, like flags waving in the wind. We're looking at the way this offense is coordinated and the 26 coaches and they just, they, you know, it's like they're so certain that what they put together is going to work. They don't have a plan B available. And that's what's hurting them right now.
Yeah, and not a plan B available, nothing seemingly, you know, working in the red zone. I mean, you would think that after, if you get that 14-yard run touchdown, come out by Matt Jones, and you come out in the third quarter and you march down the field, score a touchdown, and take the lead, you're like, okay, things seem to be going. But then let's not forget that there were three field goals that this team kicked in positions where they could have scored touchdowns, especially one that was, I think that was one off the onside kick and one off of the Ezekiel Elliott fumble. And then you've got the interception in the red zone, which, like, just kind of deflated everything. And you could almost see, I mean, I think it was Pam Oliver who did the sideline recording, and she had mentioned that right after that interception, Kurt was on the sidelines, and as McVay and the guys are talking to him, coming up with the plan for the next drive, he's kind of looking up in the sky, he looks down at the field, and he's clearly not paying attention to what they're saying because he was just so distraught by that. And you know, Pam Oliver just looking right there on the sidelines, being able to tell from his demeanor. I mean, he snatched off his helmet. It's one thing to be upset, but you have to bounce back from those. And so, again, you get three field goals, only two touchdowns, and do two touchdowns or three field goals. If you just convert one, we're talking about a different game, and then an interception in the red zone that puts a whole different spin. It's like that butterfly effect. You don't throw that interception and you go up 26-20. You're talking about a whole different game plan for Dallas, which could spin a whole lot of other things different. But we didn't get it. Captain Kirk threw that interception.
You know, it's funny. I don't want to by any means say that this is Tom Brady we're talking about. This is Captain Kirk. But see. Mm-hmm. When Tom Brady throws an interception like that, when the world knows it's his fault, he'll go over to the sideline and start cussing at the offensive coordinator for calling that play.
Right.
Say, why are you throwing a stupid play like that? You know I was going to throw an interception there. Don't call him, and they'll start arguing on the sideline, right? The dejection is not part of it. Him putting his head down is not part of the scenario, right? And what Kirk has to learn, and this is one of the problems he had, not last season when everything was like peaches and cream, but the prior season,
the last half of last season, first part of last season, he was throwing those picks.
Oh yeah, that's right. Mm-hmm. But you've got to learn that these guys are looking at him as the quarterback for leadership, not just completing mm-hmm. passes, but for leadership. Mm-hmm. It's like, remember, and God, I keep going back historically. Remember a quarterback we had here in the past that did an interview, and he said, when it's like second, you know, 2 minutes left, and you know, no timeouts, not coming to huddle, I feel like I'm the best quarterback in the league. And mm-hmm. what he was not saying that he was the best quarterback in the league, but he was saying that's the mindset you have to go into this situation with. Now, you know, our brethren in the press vilified him for that, right? You know, he's saying he's arrogant, saying he's the best quarterback. You know, no, granted, he said it wrong, but Kurt, we need a little bit more of that. We need, you mm-hmm. know, the young lady I was thinking about last week, you know, the track star that dove across the line, Shawnee Miller. That's her name. I've been for a solid week. I've been looking for her to get an interview with her because we need a want-to coach.
We need to hire her as our passion coordinator.
You know, when Kirk is sitting on the sideline with his head pointed down, she goes and slaps him across the head and shows him that picture of her diving across, winning the gold medal by wanting it more than the other people.
I can see them now, Kirk on the sidelines, warm up to go back in by diving across on the sidelines.
They look at Kurt and say, he's crazy. Yeah, and that's what Josh Norman's bringing to the thing. They're just saying he's crazy. You know, let's see if we can duplicate some of that craziness. Man, it's not always about talent. Sometimes it's about the want-to. And we got some serious adjusting to do on our want-tos.
Yeah, and by the way, I mean, we talk about Courtney's interception. I mean, what is three on the season now in the first two games? We contrast that again with the rookie back who hasn't put up, you know, extremely great numbers or whatever. I mean, he put up some pretty good numbers against the Skins. But, I mean, again, the most impressive one, and I know Jason Garrett likes this one the most, is zero interceptions and zero fumbles. And so that's probably one of the biggest ones. It's the Federal Football Report on Federal News Radio. I'm Claude Jennings of Scottsdale, Arizona. Kevin Stanfield's back in D.C. coming up next in our final segment. We'll spend 4 to 5 minutes breaking down next week's matchup against the New York Football Giants. Odell Beckham, Victor Cruz. I wonder if they put both of them on the right side, would Josh then be stuck checking no one in Frank Clemson's head? We'll talk about it later on the Federal Football Report. All right, ladies and gentlemen, it's the last segment of the Federal Football Report on Federal News Radio. I'm Claude Jennings in Scottsdale, Arizona. He's Kevin Stanfield back in the Washington, D.C. studios. The Washington Redskins fall 0-2 on the season, 0-2 at home, 27-23 to the Dallas Cowboys. Dak Prescott, very impressive. Dallas 1-1. Another NFC East opponent coming up next week, the New York Giants. And by the way, Kevin, we're going to open up the studio doors to a Giants fan. And if anyone else out there, look, man, we're not the only ones who, you know, have an opinion here. We don't claim to be the smartest or have all the best insights. See, we're not like those other radio shows that want you to listen. And when you call up and you say something, if they disagree with you, they call you stupid. No, we don't do that kind of stuff. We want to hear from you. You can tweet us at SFREP. That's the Twitter handle. And then also the email address is SFR@federalnewsradio.com. Also, you can follow me on Twitter. My Twitter handle is Hodge Radio. And the Giants, by the way, improved to 2-0 after beating the New Orleans Saints 16-13 in Week 2. So the Redskins will be going up to the New York Giants. The Giants 2-0, Skins 0-2, Dallas 1-1, and the Eagles plays the Bears, I believe, on Monday Night Football or maybe Sunday night. So we'll see the way the NFC East develops. But, of course, one of the things we know that the Redskins are going to have to do when it comes to playing these Giants is they've got two – it's one thing to have Josh Norman cover the number one receiver. Well, when you have two receivers who could be number one, then what do? They're going to have to stop Odell Beckham, and they're going to have to stop Victor Cruz. And the Giants had a pretty good running game, by the way, against the Cowboys with Shane Vereen. So we'll see. What are your initial thoughts about this game, Kevin?
Well, you know, the thing about it is, unlike Josh Norman, I want to say you do travel well since you're in Scottsdale.
Right.
You're in Scottsdale.
Indeed, I do.
You do travel well. And Rodney, I know you're listening to Rodney. Rodney's our giant analyst, man. You know, I'm hoping you'll be analyzing the Giants' loss, a divisional loss next week. But, you know, just do what you can, right? I'll be calling you soon. Yeah, I'm deeply concerned because Eli Manning is a winner. I mean, he had a very bad season last year. You got a first-year head coach who doesn't care about the tradition of the rivalry and all that. He's trying to show that he can be a good head coach in this league now. And the Giants have always given the burgundy and gold fits. I am, like we said last week, if I'm the Giants offensive coordinator, whatever side Josh Norman's on, I put Beckham on the other side, send him in motion to Josh Norman's side, let Josh wave at him, then go back to the other side. Just play with him because he's not 100% in these games, right? You know, he wants to make sure he makes a big play, and it's good because, you know, it's inspirational if he does it right, but like I say, he's getting a little bit too much media coverage, right? There's a lot of me and not a lot of us. Now, you know, in fairness, he's not saying this, but you know, he's not shying away from it either. So I'm looking for offensively, I'm looking for a heavy dose of passes for Burgundy to go from Kirk to the tight end. I'm looking for a lot of underneath stuff because Kirk's got to get his confidence going. He's got to get like four or five passes in a row, maybe if they're only for 4 or 5 yards each. And then a couple of deep shots because the Giants have, they've improved. They use money to, to improve.
They use money to improve, actually.
Yeah, they upgraded quite a bit, especially defensively. And,
exactly.
And so we have to make, it's only two games in the season. Now, it would be the wise thing to do not to panic. You're still dealing with a division that has two rookie quarterbacks in it, right? You know, and you know, and you are the NFC East. You got to maintain that physical nature. Realize that running the ball is a good thing.
Well, here's the thing with the offense. I think a great game plan would be similar to what the Giants did against Dallas in the fourth quarter. Is spread it out and run the ball. But then also you have tons of talent. Like, why would you spend another draft pick when you have tons of holes on defense or on a receiver to not spread it out and go downfield and try some explosive plays? I mean, just you've got DeSean Jackson, you've got Jordan Reed, Vernon Davis came up big in the Cowboys game. I mean, not in a winning effort, but he had some big plays. You still have Pierre Garçon, who's on the team, by the way. I mean, they're not talking that much, but he's on. You have tons of weapons, and Matt Jones showed some signs of being a number one running back against Dallas. I think spread them out, use these weapons, run the ball, and I think that's what they'll need to do against the Giants, because the Giants, like you said, did improve on defense, and not just anywhere on defense. I mean, they improved on that defensive line, and you saw that against the Cowboys. I mean, you know, for all the pressure that the Giants got on Dallas on Dak last week, he probably was sitting back in the pocket this week like, man, this is what it's like actually being protected a little bit without being rushed, because the Giants did a really good job of rushing him where the Redskins did not. And the Giants, though, let's not forget, I mean, when they played the Cowboys in week one, you know, they made the Cowboys offense line looked like a weak offensive line. I mean, the Giants' defensive line won that battle against the Cowboys' offensive line. And so, you know, the Redskins, you know, didn't really get a big rush on Kurt in week two against Dallas. They really didn't see a huge rush outside of when the Pittsburgh Steelers blitzed. They're going to see a lot of pressure on Kirk Cousins next week, and it may just come from that front four in New York, and you got to be prepared and got to be ready to handle it. They won a close game against Dallas. They won a close game against the Saints, came down to a field goal at the end, and so they're used to these close games. You got a veteran quarterback. Again, you said you got two rookie quarterbacks in the NFC East, and one of them you lost to already, and then the other quarterback, who's a veteran, has two Super Bowl rings already. He's not going to be frazzled by this stuff, and he has weapons too. And so the best thing the offense can do here is put up points, try to control the ball a little bit with the running game, to keep the Giants' offensive weapons off the field, because, again, the Cowboys controlled a lot of the clock in week one against the Giants, but the Giants, in just three plays, came down the field, scored a touchdown, took the lead 7-6, and so they can score quick. And so you want to try to control that. And we could see a shootout. We could see a slugfest. I'm not sure what we're going to see. It really, I think, all depends on what the Redskins do. I think someone needs to sit down with Kirk and just remind him, you're getting paid $18 million for this year. If you mess that up, who knows what next year is going to look like for you. You might not even be here. This team, this organization will switch quarterbacks and coaches so fast. Who knows? Someone needs to sit down and say, look, dude, gut check. Here's the thing. I'm not, like you said, one to panic. I don't think 0-2 is a death sentence or the nail in the coffin for this season, simply because you play in the East. I still think the East is probably a little weak, or at least anyone's game. Even when you look at last year, the Redskins ran away with the East kind of late in the season, so I'm not worried about that. I just think that you have to win to start getting that confidence back in your team, because 0-3 with two division losses, I'm not saying that it's time to panic. I'm just saying make sure that the panic button is close to you, because you may need to hit it in week four.
Yeah, and if anybody sees Shawnee Miller or knows her email address or something, shoot it to us so we can shoot it to the Burgundy and Gold, because they need, as Claude just said, you need some of that can-do coaching now. Just pick your head up. You know, you're a ball player. You're a rich ball. You're a high-paid ball player, right? You want to continue being a high-paid ball player? You got to do something, right? It's not about Josh Norman. And this is another thing. It's going to be all types of scrutiny on this team this next week. A lot of it's going to be about the Beckham Jr. Norman matchup, right? And a lot of it's going to be about Kirk. And he's going to have to, like, that pressure that Wallace's putting on him, he's going to have to put all of that aside and realize that it's up to him to lead this team to victory, because their defense is not going to stop everybody, or in this case, anybody. They're not going to stop them. They're going to have to outscore people. So it's pretty much all on Kirk's shoulders right now. You got $19 million in your wallet. You got the pressure of being the man on your shoulders. You don't have to stand tall, right? Or the pressure will crush you.
And, you know, and by the way, because we do this every week, we're watching the game in the sports bar, and you and I talk about this all the time. My wife looks up at the screen and says, how come no one's at the stadium? How come no one's there? This is a close. close games. In the third quarter, he says, look at all these empty seats. You see blue jerseys, and you see empty seats. They're like, where in the world is this home field advantage? Come on, Redskins fans. Nothing better than that, man.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, the Redskins fan will give you all credit. You're smart. You saw what happened last week. You know, why fight all that traffic, you know? But that's something that that Jay Gruden has got. He hasn't taken advantage of that either. And, you know, here we are being revisionists again. Joe Gibbs, you know, he goes, preview the game, Joe. Oh, it's going to be a tough one. We're going to need every one of y'all fans out there because we can't do it without you. And the people, hey, Joe can't do it without us. We're not going to let you down, Joe. I mean, it's corny. It's truly corny, but it's true. It's true. The fans got to be a part of the experience, right? And let the teams rely on it, right? And when these people start selling their tickets to the opposing fans, that's not being a true fan. That's being an entrepreneur, right? You know, we don't need you, right? So if you're going to sell your tickets at a discount to a Burgundy and Gold fan, right? You know, there are people who will take them from off your hands if you don't want to go, right? Because the quarterback can't do it by himself. The defense can't do it by himself. But if we support the team, they can do anything. And they got to believe that. And that's when I find Sean A. Miller to be the can-do coach. I'll get ready to tell them that same thing.
Absolutely. We believe we can do it, and we do it every week. Next week, man, we'll talk about this Washington Redskins game against the New York Giants, as only we can, on the Federal Football Report. Don't forget, you can email us, fr@federalnewsradio.com, or you can hit us up on Twitter at SFREP, or you can hit me on Twitter, Claude J Radio, Twitter handle. I'm Claude Jennings of Scottsdale, Arizona. I'm going to go take some pictures next to a couple of cacti, and he's Kevin Stanfield. He's in the nation's capital. You're listening to the Federal Football Report on Federal News Radio.
You're in my spot.